I know we've only known each other for 4 weeks and 3 days, but to me, it seems like 9 weeks and 5 days. The first day seemed like a week, and the second day seemed like 5 days, and the third day seemed like a week again, and the fourth day seemed like 8 days. But the fifth day, you went to see your mother, and that seemed just like a day. But then you came back, and then later, on the sixth day in the evening when we saw each other, that started seeming like 2 days. So in the evening it seemed like 2 days spilling over into the next day, and that started seeming like 4 days. So at the end of the sixth day, on into the seventh day, it seemed like a total of 5 days. And the sixth day seemed like a week and a half. I have it written down, but I can show it to you tomorrow if you want to see it.
TBTL!
I'm starting my own podcast.
Hey, that could be fun.
It's sentimental. It's emotionally dishonest. It implodes into nothingness.
It's had all the funny parts on it, all the good parts, celebrities, dancing stuff, and music.
I got recognized on the street today. Guy had already met me and then forgotten he met me, and then recognized me from TV, and then remembered me again.
I don't know a lot about business, but he did an internet, and now the computers like him, and Wall Street is Google.
Things are going to start happening to me now.
All right, hello, good morning, and welcome everybody to a Wednesday edition of TBTL.
Isn't that for techno geeks with spreadsheets?
The show that just might be too beautiful to live. My name's Luke Burbank. I'm your host.
This show is a joke. You are a joke.
Coming to you from the Burbank Springs Broadcast Center, perched atop Alabama Hill in Bellingham, Washington, the Bay City. It is July 1st, also known as Canada Day. Happy Canada Day to all of our listeners.
Look north, my son.
Canada.
Canada.
Up there in Canada. Down here in Bellingham, it is raining and cloudy and foggy. And inside the Burbank Springs Broadcast Center, you have to have the lights on, even though it's almost 10 a.m. in the morning. It's like that dark. It's like nighttime dark up here. But it is bright and sunny inside of episode 3196 in a collector's series.
Let the fun begin.
Which we are proud to present to you today. We're going to talk about such top stories as this company in Israel that is 3D printing plant-based steaks.
The Tracy Jordan meat machine.
It's quite something to behold, and we will talk about it. They say the issue with plant-based steaks has been the texture has been wrong, and that's because people have not been 3D printing them, apparently. We will cover that breaking news. Also, a number of the people who were involved in that Gal Gadot Imagine kind of video project that started right at the beginning of the pandemic that was very well intentioned, of course. A lot of those people are talking about how they got roped into it.
I wish I hadn't done that.
And, you know, why it didn't work, why it went over like a, as we say, a lead balloon or screen doors on a submarine. I think I only, like, in the moment of saying that, realized why screen doors on a submarine would be bad. I remember hearing that as a kid. I feel like my dad might have said that. But it's only here on July 1st in the year of our Lord 2020 on a rainy Wednesday in Bellingham, Washington at 44 years of age that I realized, oh, because the water would come in. Screen doors would be a terrible idea on submarines. That would keep the mosquitoes out. So on that, and, you know, it's kind of a win. All right, let's get the show started for realsies by making contact with this young guy, the youngest running co-bro of the show. Known for his drawings of tall ships, he has only one question right here at the top of the program.
Is it legal to be this insane?
He is Andrew Walsh, and he is joining me right now from the Roosevelt neighborhood of Seattle, Washington. Good morning, my friend.
Maybe I could be known as Young Money. Y-O-N-G. It's
a good nickname for me. Am I allowed to nickname myself at the top of the show
here?
If it's
Young Money.
Young Money. Hey. Now,
but the money, is the money going to be a dollar sign, or is it going to be the word money, or is it going to be something else clever?
It's going to be Aesop with dollar signs for some reason.
Love
that
it.
I'm still
it's
not
pronounced
clear
Young
on.
Money.
But it's pronounced. And if you don't know, then man, you just don't know. Couple of things at the top of the show here. Got this somewhat chilling dream message from listener Tanying in Pittsburgh. There's a bit of a setup on it, but this is what caught my eye. I was watching Luke do an episode of TBTL, but he was doing it all by himself. He said something offhand about how he will be doing the show by himself now. No other explanation. Also, it seemed like he was adopting a Howard Stern format. I remember wondering what happened between him and Andrew and why we didn't get a proper goodbye. That is just a chilling thing to read in the morning as we set out to do this Wednesday episode.
Now, so did I create that dream? Because yesterday I was saying on the show how my living nightmare is to have to host. Ooh. I mean, this would be nerve-wracking, but at least this is just recorded. It'd really be to be on the radio, on the radiolo, solo, trying to just like get people to call in and just try to keep the needle moving for hours at a time at night.
Yeah, so are you saying that doing it as a podcast would be less intimidating or more intimidating?
Well, yes, because it's not going out to people's car radios,
right?
You know, as the words are coming out of my mouth, so that would make me a little bit less nervous.
Yeah,
I'd
that's
probably
true.
Just keep starting over a lot. I'd get an hour and a half into the show, and then I'd be like, this isn't good. And I would start a new recording on my mix pre. I know you know the move, Andrew.
No, I know the move.
And then I would...
I have so many files of half-recorded Everlane ads where I just bail on them and start over. They always end with a swear. F it. I'll just start a new file. By the way, Tanying says, though, don't worry about it. I think about what my mom told me when I was little. Dreams are backwards, meaning that dreams foretell the opposite of what the future holds. So this is... potentially very good for our working relationship. But speaking of dreams, Luke, and this is way more relevant to your interests,
yeah,
to your interests. This is about dreams coming true. Not my dreams coming true, but your dreams coming true, because it does look like potentially within a few days, I will be the owner of a lightly used printer, scanner, fax machine. Although it sounds like the way it'll be set up in my house, I won't be able to really fax or scan, but that's fine. I was working with my – I'm kind of surprised not to get more of a reaction out of you on this. I mean, you've been – I mean, to you, like
– You got like six dings. I'm excited for you.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not somebody who's been craving a printer for a long time, but I know that I feel like – you feel like we're in two warring camps because you believe in printing so strongly, and I'm so meh about it that this is almost like – me joining your camp. But I was working on a project with the group I volunteer with, and I mentioned that I don't have a printer, and so somebody was going to print something out for me, these flyers, and then somebody was like, oh, you don't have a printer? Well, you know, my 94-year-old mom, we set her up with this printer a long time ago, and she doesn't really need it because she's 94 and not running a zine.
She can just tear things right out of the Reader's Digest.
Yeah, right.
She doesn't need to print them off the web.
I read a great joke in Reader's Digest this weekend. I'll grab it for tomorrow. I can't remember it.
Did it involve screen doors on a submarine?
No, it didn't. Ugh. Anyway, but yeah, so I'll let you know how the whole printing thing works. I'm very excited for you. That is the kind of thing where it's not really a wireless one, but they're going to rig it to make it a wireless one for me. I get the impression that the husband of this couple who is giving it to me must run some sort of a technology or computer consultancy, or he does something in IT or something, because he sent me this long email explaining all the ins and outs of this printer and how it will work in my house. And he did want to warn me that it's the type that is a color printer and it will not work even if you're out of one color, and even if it's magenta and you don't need magenta and it's going to cost a lot of money to replace them all. Like, he's like, just so you know, this is what you're getting into here.
I'm in exactly that situation with mine, which is very, very frustrating, which is, it will periodically just tell me that I'm out of, and literally I think cyan and magenta both come up, and I'm like, hey, guess what? I'm cool with black and white, but it won't let me do it.
Yep.
And I am frustrated by it, and yet for me it is just a I don't know what's, it's a safety net. Like the idea that I have, I'm looking at this show sheet that is printed out as I do each day, and that I have this article about the people wishing they had not been in the Gal Gadot Imagine song cover. Just the fact that I can just grab this thing from CNN and just look at it and flip it over, as opposed to going and finding it on a screen somewhere and hoping that I get to the right thing. I'm sure if I just took like 2 weeks and just upped my kind of digital reading skills and developed some systems, it would be fine. But it honestly stresses me out. It's a weird, it's a almost phobic thing for me. Also, I feel like when we talked about this a different time, I got an email from a listener, maybe somebody who even works in the lumber industry, who was, I think, explaining to me why printing is not the worst. I don't know if it has to do with the fact that paper is fairly easily recyclable, or because I the part of the thing that I've never felt great about is like, am I harming the environment by printing? And I feel like I got some confirmation from someone that it's not the worst thing you can do. It's not like, you know, on the level of a lot of the other things that we do that are not great for planet Earth.
Well, I would say that compared to the way it works when you're working in an organization, like if you were hosting a 3-hour talk show like we used to do over at Cairo Radio, which has come up a lot lately. I guess it's the DNA of the show, but like,
we just don't want people to forget that we used to actually be radio stars.
Radio stars, exactly. Mm-hmm. But you know, I mean, how it works on that show is like, let's say there's like a producer and two hosts working on a show, and the producer says, here's like, I don't know, we have 3 hours, here's 12 to 17 stories that we'll be talking about on the show today. And then everybody gets a printout of the full article of like 17 articles plus the, you know, 4-page show sheet, which is then updated throughout the show several times. So that gets printed out. Like, we used to churn through so much paper in an operation like that. You're now like printing out like what, maybe 2 articles a day and a simple show sheet for yourself?
Yes. And I do. Hold on. Should we go back to yesterday's breakout hit of me just Googling things?
Because yes.
I may have actually found something less interesting, which is if I'm printing double-sided or not. And Andrew, yes, Virginia, I am printing double-sided, so it's even less paper being used.
There you go.
And you know what I think it is for me, too, is you just were being very complimentary yesterday about my, I guess you could say, reading comprehension skills while working as a radio host. And I think more... I'm sure you edited it out, but just so the listeners know, Andrew was being very kind to me yesterday and saying that I have a pretty good knack for like kind of taking in a bunch of information.
Just for the record, I didn't edit it out. What I did was I overdubbed me making fart sounds over top of the entire conversation.
Oh, okay. I've been getting some emails. I've been seeing some stuff on the Slack page about that, and that explains a lot. I think more what it is I think I kind of – this is weird, but I think I absorb information in – like patterns or chunks. Like I will look at a page and it's not really speed reading, but there's something about like I can absorb most of the information on a printed page pretty fast.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not even necessarily that I'm reading. This is why I probably make a lot of errors as well, because maybe it's that I'm not starting at word one and reading to the final word on the page. I'm just somehow kind of almost through osmosis getting the information. And that's a thing my brain is able to do. Again, it's not a perfect science, and it probably leads me to make some fairly major mistakes. But I can't do that the same way if I'm scrolling through an article on the internet for whatever reason. It's just like holding a tactile thing, looking at it. My brain is able to absorb that information in a more effective way. Speaking of the supercomputer that is my brain, Andrew, I did go ahead and take the stupid cybersecurity training yesterday, and it was as infuriating as I remember it being the last 3 times we've done it. And I swear to God, like, I know of all the hard things that people go through in the world, this is very, very low on the list, but I felt so defeated by having to do this training. Like, I fought the urge. At various points during the training, I fought the urge to email our boss, not our direct boss, but like our boss's boss, Dave Kansas, or even John McTaggart. I fought the urge, Andrew, to email them and go, have you guys ever taken this?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I really, I honestly played it out in my head. Would that be considered aggressive? Or, I mean, would that be considered insubordinate or or disrespectful in some way. I mean, we work allegedly in a collaborative environment where anyone at the company should be able to ask anyone else at the company any question as long as it's done in a respectful fashion. And if I didn't do it in a like accusatory way, but just kind of curious, hey, I'm just kind of curious, have you actually taken this? Because it's I can't think, and we've complained way too much about this on the show. The listeners are bored to tears with it. But there's something about an enforced hour to 2 hours of sitting there waiting for information that you already know. And by the way, Andrew, I also got 100 on the quiz because the quiz, unless you were someone who had – unless you were unfrozen caveman lawyer, mm-hmm. I don't think one listener of ours, and that includes the children – could possibly get one of the answers wrong on the final test of cybersecurity. It is written in such a ridiculous way. It will be like, you know, you spilled coffee on your shirt and your laptop is almost out of power. Mm-hmm. What do you do? And then it's like answer one is go find 4 USB drives on the streets and plug them into all of your coworkers' computers. And then number two is take the laptop, go to the top of the roof of the building and throw it off, seeing if you can hit any passersby. And then number three is requisition a power cord and make sure you have VPN'd in and are using good cybersecurity practices. Those were really terrible examples, but you get
no,
the
they
idea.
Weren't, like, Luke. No, they weren't. That's what the problem is. They were very good examples, and they're very accurate examples. I'm not joking. They were like that. Like when I was taking the quiz, I was not reading the question. I considered it a failure if I had to read the question before
I
chose an
thing.
Answer. And that was the way I was getting through it. It was like, I can do this without reading the question. I will admit that out of probably over the course of this thing, let's say you answer how many questions? Maybe 40 questions over the course of all the little tutorials. I probably had to read the question 3 or 4 times.
Right. I did that. It's so funny. I did the exact same thing. I was like, I'm going to make this fun for at least somewhat fun for myself while I'm watching Chris Hayes interview various American mayors. I'm going to try to not ever read the question and just see if I can get the answer right based on a scintilla of brain cells.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, there was like maybe once or twice, because then once I had like gotten, let's say, I don't know what the final quiz is, 15 questions. Once I'd gotten like 10 right, it started to become important to me that I get all of them right.
Yeah, I got a bit. I got into that too. Yeah.
So there was a couple times where I was like, I want to read the question just because I want to like, mm-hmm. I kind of don't want to screw this up for myself now.
Yeah. Right.
But again, I know that this is not even in the top 1 million problems people face in the world, but I swear to God, taking that quiz, I felt like Cool Hand Luke when he sings Plastic Jesus, and he's just like a broken man. He's just sitting sadly on the bunk playing the banjo.
On the dashboard of my car comes in colors pink and pleasant.
Just like Paul Newman, just as a broken man. He's just been like, they've got him. I mean, technically he's sad because his mom has died at this point in the movie, but it still just symbolizes this idea that they broke him. I just felt like they broke me as I was just like listening to that silly voiceover and seeing those. One of them, I almost tweeted this at you, but I feel
it's
like,
again,
we've danced this dance too many times together and for the listeners to be interested anymore, but they seem like they have updated one of the graphics, which is it shows a USB drive, but it's on a fishing hook.
Oh, I didn't notice that. I wasn't really paying that much attention to the whole thing.
I screen capped it, and I wanted to do some snarky tweet to you that was sort of like, the fishing hook should have been a dead giveaway. Like,
yeah, like, right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, now it's at the point where it's like, so I guess the idea is it's your lucky day. You found a USB drive in the parking lot, but it's on a fishing hook.
Yeah.
So is someone just reeling it away from you, like that joke people do with the dollar bill and a piece of fishing line? Are you chasing a USB drive through the parking lot of your company so as to grab it and then immediately plug it into Dave Kansas's computer?
It's your lucky day. You found a USB drive in the parking lot. It is in the center of what appears to be a bear trap or a string that is tied into
a
round
bent over.
Trap. Yeah, exactly.
It's a loop. That's
zoink,
odd.
And then also you're up in a net like the Scooby Gang.
Yeah. Did you get me anything for Canada Day?
Oh, No, it's weird. You said no gifts. No. That was your idea. No gifts this
year. I said
year.
No gifts over $20.
I didn't hear the second part of that. I treat you like I treat the cybersecurity training. I only listen to what I have to.
I actually said no gifts.
Oh, no.
Because a lot of times on important holidays, you'll just give me a gift.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and no. Like, well, you go into a meme war, you're going to be ready.
I was doing a little very cursory research on Canada Day. It's sort of referred to as Canada's birthday, but in reading the Wikipedia page on it, that's a little bit of a general, overly broad description of it. It was when it's also known, I think, as Dominion Day. It's basically when the three kind of areas of Canada all bonded together and became one entity, still, I believe, as part of the British Empire. But it went from being three kind of distinct things in Canada to being one big – again, I don't know if country is exactly the right word because it is – is Canada a commonwealth?
I think it's
still associated with the British Empire in a – I think in a kind of a kind of hands-off way. In enough of a way that I think Prince Harry and Meghan are still – are they still living like 10 miles from my house? That was a weird moment where like that was like the biggest story in the world. Obviously, this was before the pandemic, and they were they were leaving their royal duties, and then where do they end up? They end up in British Columbia, like not far from where I am.
Yeah, yeah, and I think they're still living the life of commoners, and in I'm sure they're really living the life of commoners in Canada.
Yeah, I've been working with camera, people, camera operators for my TV stories who've been assigned, because a lot of these guys are freelancers, and so they'll just go do whatever the work is for whatever network, and a number of them had been assigned to just stand at the end of a long road, which was legally as close as they could get to where that couple was holed up, and to just literally film nothing in case something happened and nothing ever happened.
That is – that I would hate that job so much, not just because of the tedium or just being bored, but just like that type of – that feels so invasive to me. And I know that that's the world we live in, but oh, I would hate that.
The closest I ever got to that, and I think it was a very different scenario. In fact, I think it was a newsworthy story, was the Dick Cheney shooting a guy in the face, going to Corpus Christi, Texas, and then just standing in a field next to the hospital where the guy was recuperating, where there were no media availabilities. Mm-hmm. You were not allowed to go inside there, and the hospital was not releasing the comment, nor was the guy who got shot in the face by Dick Cheney, nor was Dick Cheney. So I just sat in a field eating Whataburger for a week, which actually, is not the worst thing that could have happened to me in my life, but it was just that feeling of like, why are we here?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what are we even doing here? We're just standing around, and we all know that we're not going to get any story out of this, but this is, I guess, kind of how journalism works or something.
The one time I had to try to reach somebody in the hospital, do you remember this? This is one of my – of all of the like the things I've booked for public radio and what have you, one of my fondest booking memories was actually for Ross and Burbank. I don't know if you know this. Before I was a star on Cairo Radio, I was a producer to the stars on Cairo Radio, producing a guy named Luke Burbank and Dave Ross. And there was this local story about how your grill brush can kill you. Do you remember this? There was a guy in the hospital because he had been at a barbecue or his own barbecue. He'd cleaned the grill with a grill cleaning brush, which had those metal bristles on it. And he had eaten a piece of steak or something that had a metal bristle on it. And sorry, this I probably should have said trigger warning because it's upsetting to think about. Somehow that thing got lodged into one of his intestines. It was causing some major problems for him. It was headline news in our world. And I was able to get him on the phone from the hospital live and direct on Ross and Burbank. And I still think about that. I'm like, that was a good get, man, because he was good.
That's a great get.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was. I remember him being very likable.
Yep.
And yeah, like getting somebody in the hospital to do an interview, is and also this was the perfect thing because it was still a lighthearted story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, believe it or not, less. It was. I mean,
you know what I mean? Because usually you talk to somebody in the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
Right. That's like the perfect, it's like a weird story. There's got a lot of interesting stuff going on. You're talking to a guy live from his hospital bed, but it's also kind of it's not the worst case scenario. There's a certain levity to the story. So it's sort of like that's the perfect that's the perfect moment for one of those shows. I think I quit shortly after that interview because I knew we could never be better than that.
Never top it. That was a fun job, man. That was a really fun time.
I know. I think I didn't appreciate it the way I should have.
Well, everything feels like a grind.
Yeah, I think so. I did manage to get... I think in the years after you left, too, it got even more pronounced. But that show started at 9 a.m., and somehow I had it down to where I was allowed to come in at 8:45 and just start the show. It was pretty... I'm amazed that anybody went for that. But all right, hey, speaking of steaks, Andrew, when we come back from this break, I want to tell you about this company that is making 3D printed plant-based steaks in Israel. And also I want to tell you about how Chris O'Dowd, this actor who I'm a big fan of because he's in that show Get Shorty that I love, how he describes how and why he got roped into doing that Imagine video with Gal Gadot. So we'll do all that coming up in a moment here on this special Canada Day edition of TBTL. Stay with us.
Hello and welcome to Top Story.
Top story by way of Reuters.com. Israeli startup Redefine Meats plans to launch 3D printers to produce plant-based steaks mimicking real beef next year in a bid for a slice of the fast-growing alternative meat market. Now, I know that we've talked a lot about this topic, but what jumped out at me about this story was that there was also a video component to this thing. I don't know. Did you have a chance to watch the video, Andrew?
No, I didn't.
It is really something. They actually have – this company has produced this kind of I guess you could call it like sizzle reel of what the 3D printing of this steak substitute looks like. And basically what they do in the video, they have their food scientists explaining that they took real steaks. And then they broke down, like, what are the flavor profiles and components of steak? And it is, and this is a little gross, I'm sorry, but it's basically blood, fat, and then the meat. And then they go and they create, like, plant-based versions of those three things. And then this printer prints them out. And it's actually, like... It looks very gross as the printing process is happening. When I first read the story, by the way, I thought that this meant like I could actually download a plant-based steak at my house, which seemed like you're going to want to wash the 3D printer after that.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
You know? Also, can we just take a quick moment to talk about what we call 3D printing technology? Because to me, I mean, I guess I feel like that's a kind of a misdescribing of what's going on. Like what I'm seeing in this video that's happening in Tel Aviv is a piece of industrial machinery is constructing something. Like when we think of printers, and by the way, who knew that printers were going to play such a key role in the topics of today's show? But when I think of a printer, I think of this thing that's next to me or that thing you're going to be inheriting soon, Andrew, something that kind of prints stuff out on paper. Then 3D printer, it's something kind of like that, but it just can make stuff that has more, three dimensions to it. But then you get into this whole other thing, which is like these are not going to be in people's homes. These are basically industrial machines that will you put a certain amount of it's as if you made a Coke. You called a Coke machine a 3D printer, a liquid 3D printer. Why? Because it has a bag of the syrup. It has a bag of like, you know, or it has a feature where it's just the carbonated water coming in and then it combines them in your cup. Is that 3D liquid printing?
Well, I think there are people who know more about this than we do. I'm going to go down a limb and say that.
It.
And I'm going to trust them a little bit more. But here's where I think that it comes from this idea, though, that – and I know everything is computers these days. I would like to just put that out there. The internet changed everything, and everything is computer these days. But, you know, manufacturing wasn't always computer-based, and it certainly wasn't. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to type something into this computer, and then, boom, it's going to come out – as a 3D object on the other end. Like there was a lot of processes in between, like you say, adding water, adding syrup, adding all these things and manually kind of doing it. I guess what you're saying is when you get into the specific printing like this, you have a machine that is so specified with what it's containing. Yeah. Is putting like whatever this red goo is into one of these little 3D printer pens. Is that the same as pouring some corn syrup into one of those, soda machines at the movie theater? I don't know, but I do think there's something about the fact that I just created something using some program on a computer. I hit the enter button, which is how I assume it works, and then boom, yeah, this machine is pooping it out.
Hmm. They didn't say that in the sizzle reel. Maybe they
really
should have.
Hmm.
We've designed a machine that can poop out plant-based meats. Yeah, the guy who's the CEO of the company says, you need a 3D printer to mimic the structure of the muscle of the animal. And like I said, when you first see it being assembled, it looks kind of gross, but then it actually kind of makes sense from a, you know, layering standpoint and like what makes a good steak. I do, by the way, miss eating steak sometimes. Mm-hmm. Which is kind of weird because it's like that's about as meaty as it gets. You'd think for me, being a person who's not a meat eater anymore, I might crave, I don't know, a piece of bacon now or then. But like a steak is, you're really going for it with the meat. Mm-hmm. I do kind of crave steak. I also used to eat a ton of steak because I was also always trying to low carb. The funny thing about this whole presentation too of this printout is, you know, this company, and by the way, they're gonna distribute these machines to various places, and they think eventually that they can 3D print these steaks for way cheaper than real meat costs. But this is a promotional video that they've basically made where they're – and I've been around let's call product shots. So it's like you're doing a story, like when I did a story about those Snickers fun-sized – or the fun-sized candy bars being made in Chicago. There's a whole PR team from Mars making sure that our cameras only see the most perfectly made,
yeah, sure,
fun size candy. You know what I mean? It's like they're going to be gosh darned if we get any like they had people. I've never been more closely monitored than being in that factory. It was like I was in North Korea looking at a centrifuge or something. It was crazy.
Or in the Willy Wonka factory, it sounds like.
Yeah. The less fun Willy Wonka factory.
Well, no, but remember, like that's a big part of it is like he's always trying to like make right. sure that don't look over there,
secrets.
Don't look over there.
Yeah. Yeah. But so I know that like they made this video because they wanted to present it absolutely the best that they could. And they have like a chef, you know, cooking this up perfectly. And they're doing that thing on the plate where it's like they smear a sauce. You mm-hmm. know, that kind of like real high end eating where we're not going to give you a side of ranch. We're going to do this like artistic smear of mm-hmm. something and then put the steak on it and then a drizzle of whatever. It's really funny because the CEO is eating the steak at the end and this mm-hmm. is the payoff. And I can tell it does not look like it tastes good.
Oh, really? Because I was going to say, I was just watching it now on silent and the texture looks good as he bites into it. Are yeah. you looking at his face to say that
I'm
it
looking
taste
at
good?
Well, first of all, I think the final product looks kind of weird to me. And you notice they're not doing any tight shots of what the like marbling looks like. Mm-hmm. Like if you watch the end where he's actually cutting into it, it's kind of you don't really get to see what he's dealing with. And it doesn't look quite steakish enough for me, considering this is an entire team of people taking a day or a week out of their life to create this moment where this fake steak looks perfect. Can you imagine when you have one of these just like at some Outback Steakhouse that has a 3D fake steak pooper in the back? That's a show title.
I was about to say, is 3D fake steak pooper a show title? Is it?
Maybe. But like what I'm saying is this is the best version of this. Like if you were to actually encounter this out there in real life, just under normal circumstances, if it was something you could order. It's not going to be, this is the one that's getting all of the TLC in the world. And this one, I have to say, did not look convincing enough to me. And I did really feel like the CEO, in fact, I can't really play this video here, but are you able to play the video from your end and just kind of cut to the end where, I forget what the CEO says, but my memory of it was that he didn't even say, that's so good. Like, I feel like he can't quite bring himself to lie about the quality of this thing.
Okay, I'm here anyway, so let's listen to the last about 30 seconds okay. of this, which might be okay. too much, but
Redefined Meat raised $6 million last year in a round led by CPT Capital, an investor in Beyond Meat and Impossible Foods. It's also partnering with Swiss flavor maker Givaudan.
There's
at the
drizzle.
End of the day, technology is important, but what's more interesting is to have a really delicious and tasty food product that you can cut through and have a bite and be excited.
That's it. He takes a bite. It. He kind of closes his eyes and goes,
yeah.
But you can't hear it.
But yeah. It's like he goes. The importance is by the way, that's Sacha Baron Cohen's accent he was doing yesterday when he was singing at the far right rally. He's like, the most important thing is just that we have this, this great product that is, yada yada yada. And then he just like takes a bite, and then that's just like the end of the video. Like you'd think that he would be like delicious or. Boy, I wouldn't know that's not a real steak. Mm-hmm. But he just kind of like, I almost feel like he's trying to straddle the line between being honest and also hyping his product.
It does end in a somewhat awkward place. Yeah, I think for me, and I'm probably a broken record on this, but I think for me, I mean, that kind of looks good to me. But I know the whole point is they're trying to recreate a steak. I wish that, I don't know. I wish that they would just create things that are, I want to take this back. Hold on. Rewind. Stop. Okay. That's a bad sentence. Like, it would be interesting to me if they made some sort of like kind of, I don't know if you would say processed food like this or like kind of invented food like this that is based on some sort of meatless product, probably vegetable based, but it wasn't trying to recreate a meat experience, right. But was just creating some sort of new experience. Like, not necessarily just sitting down to eat a big plate of vegetables, not necessarily sitting down to eat something that is supposed to be like a hot dog or a steak, but can you 3D print something new with these materials that is like that way you're not always making the comparison of like, well, does this live up to a steak? Instead, it's just something that you look forward to?
That's a great question because what I've noticed in my own journey with not eating a lot of meat is, well, not eating meat at all, but also like at the beginning for me, it was like, let me just figure out every fake meat product and what's the most like meat. And what I've actually found myself doing now is, like, for instance, there's this really great burger joint by our house called The Filling Station. And they have, like Impossible or Beyond, one of those things. And I was eating that for a while, loving it, because I was like, it's just almost like a regular burger. But, they also have this quinoa and black bean patty. That's so good. And now that's what I order. I don't even order the fake meat thing. And the burger and quinoa or the quinoa and black bean thing, it's not trying to be a hamburger patty like you wouldn't know it's not from a cow. It's being something different, but it's a really yummy thing that's different. And I have found myself, with some exceptions, like I do, I'm a lot of people hitting me up on Twitter asking me for my recommendations on plant-based hot dogs. And what I keep telling everybody are I like these things. I think they're called Smart Life or Light Life. You think I would be able to remember the name, but I think they're called Smart Life. And what I like about them is that they are not trying to be anything special. They are like, they taste to me the most like a very forgettable hot dog, as I wrote on Twitter, that your mom would have boiled up six of on a Tuesday night when you were 13. Like, and that's what I'm going for with a hot dog experience personally. But anyway, aside from that, I'm finding myself going more and more towards things that aren't trying to be meat, I guess is what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And maybe that's what's leaving me cold is the fake hot dog experience, because like we have these things in our freezer that we just keep kind of all the time in case we just want to grab something in a pinch. And they're the Morningstar Grillers, right? And I guess they're like in the shape of a hamburger, but I've never eaten them because I'm thinking, I'm in the mood for a hamburger right now, but I don't have anything, so I'm going to eat a griller. They're not that much like hamburgers. They're like patties that are their own thing. And we started keeping them in the house only because when I was first dating Genevieve forever ago, she was a vegan. I think that was a pretty short period of her life. But she lived with a vegan. She was a vegan. And these things, I believe, are vegan. They might just be vegetarian, but either way, she was the reason she would, throw them in the freezer as, kind of a backup. And I started eating them, and I don't remember the first time I had one. I was such a huge meat eater and still am that maybe I turned my nose up at it. I don't know. But like now, 20 years later, like I just like these things and I crave them, but I crave them on their own terms. I'm never eating them because I want the hamburger experience. They're not like that. That's why when you're talking about, and I've never had it, but you were describing the the Subway veggie patties that they have. And you were describing it, and I was like, oh, that's almost like kind of griller-esque, only probably a little bit chunkier with like, because then I looked it up and it looks a little bit like kind of a garden patty. Again, I was looking at the promotional materials for it, so maybe it's terrible. But like that veggie patty thing on the Subway sandwich doesn't look terrible. It looked to me like you might need two of them on there because I'm a big boy, but it doesn't look terrible, but it also doesn't look like it's trying to be anything else.
One of the other things that this company is going to be doing is not just 3D printing these steaks, but also they're working with a company that's growing meat in a lab, which I have very mixed feelings about. My whole problem, I guess, with me eating meat is I want to try to not support animals having an unnecessarily sad and bad life. But a piece of meat that's just grown in a lab, it's not conscious. It's not connected to a brain. It's just cells dividing. And so therefore, it completely changes that sort of consideration for me. But it also kind of weirds me out.
Yeah, I don't know how I feel about that. I've often said that, like, See, because I'm still eating meat. So therefore, if my alternative is eat this steak that is, you know, literally from a farm, or eat this just totally equivalent, like Daniel's broiler style, I would never know, but it happened to be grown in a lab. Like, if those are my choices, then I think I would take the lab one, because both of them are kind of gross when you think about it, and one of them causes harm to both the planet and an animal. So I think that I would be very into lab grown meat, although I do understand there's a lot of stigma about that. But when you really think about the factory farms, like, there should be stigma about that. I mean, you want to talk about gross and immoral.
Yeah, I think I would have to, like, the first time I ate some of that, I would be a little bit weirded out. But then if it was exactly the same and I couldn't tell the difference, I think I would go for it. And I mean, it would seem, I have no training in this area, I'm just completely shooting from the hip here, but it would seem that if they get the like, you know, laboratory based meat growing, if they get that down to a system where they can create lots of it, I mean, farms are just going to go away, right? Like, it's way more labor intensive and you'd think resource intensive to like have big. And it's also not great for the environment. It's literally just the cow farts alone are not great. Just having these vast tracts of land that are being used by these animals that then they're killing and mailing all over the world, et cetera, like, that's a way harder process than just a giant, like, probably powered by the Amazon cloud, huge warehouse somewhere that's just like has shelf after shelf after shelf after shelf of tomahawk steak that's just growing.
Just seems weird that on as we approach the 4th of July weekend, you're going to declare war against American farmers. Seems like a weird platform.
I'm just saying, the economics, it just seems like it was so much easier to just grow meat in a lab if you get it figured out. I mean, you know what I mean?
No, I am with you. I kind of was saying that jokingly because I'm sure some people would hear that and they would say, yeah, but what would that do to like, well, I mean, if we eliminated that kind of farming in America, what would that look like on a macro level? I have no idea.
I mean, I don't know how many listeners we have that are farmers. And obviously there are some small farmers that are figuring out ways to make it. But I actually feel like, you know, the only way you can really compete in farming these days is to be one of these giant agribusinesses that is just like kind of absorbed up maybe tens, if not hundreds of smaller farms so that you can just like the economies of scale for your company are doable. And in fact, when I was in Tenino, they're doing an interesting project down there. Where basically, like, if you're a small farmer and you want to, like, process some kind of crop that you're growing or, you know, process an animal product that you're growing and slaughtering, it's that processing part. It's not even the growing of it. It's the, like, processing it later that's really expensive. Like, you need a lot of expensive equipment and stuff. And so it makes it not viable to be a small farmer. What they're doing, they got money from the state. They're building a processing center. So that if you are like a small farmer and you grow something, you can bring it to the processing center and it processes it for you. So that then you can actually like make a living doing your thing. You don't have to have all of the processing ability, because that's what makes it not not profitable for smaller operations. But I guess I was just going to say, obviously that would – I don't know anything about the farming industry in this country, but I would – it would seem like eventually it would be hard for them to compete with lab-grown meat. But mm-hmm. I mean, we'd still need vegetables though, right?
Yeah.
Oh boy. If they can lab grow a zucchini, sign me up. I'm there.
Why?
I don't know. hey, speaking of futuristic technology, the virtual Tour de France is kicking off. A training platform called Zwift is partnering with a sports organization called ASO to put on the first ever virtual Tour de France. 92 men and 68 women from a total of 40 teams will race each other from basically stationary bikes in their houses. It's going to be this is going to feature six stages of approximately 1 hour each over 3 weekends, beginning this weekend, 4th of July. It's going to be broadcast in more than 130 countries, and it's going to raise money for charity. By the way, this is a piece by Josh Petrie in Bloomberg where I saw this. And basically this company has gone and created, like, they built this whole virtual world of a bunch of the really memorable sections of the Tour de France. The Tour de France is supposed to happen, I think it's like August, but it's really up in the air if it's actually going to happen, the real one. And so a lot of people are saying, well, this might be the closest we get to one this year. And so they built this whole virtual world. And basically what it comes down to is, if you're cycling, like if you're one of the people competing in this, you're riding a Peloton type bike or whatever at your, wherever you are at your house. And the amount of like kilowatts you're putting out is that then is how they measure like how fast you're riding and if you're winning the virtual bike race. Mm. And this seemed kind of silly to me, but then I watched a demo where a guy was calling it, and it was one of the screens was the guy actually like riding, is this guy from Poland, like riding his bike at his house. And then the other screen was the virtual version of him racing with people. And then there was the announcer calling it. And I was like, this is totally convincing to me. Mm. This is like a 3D printed fake steak. I'm buying this.
Mm-hmm. There's little steaks riding these bikes. Yeah. So I assume that, I mean, this technology, I mean, the home technology for these stationary bikes is so beyond anything I've probably ever even seen before. But my assumption is that they recreate the pathway or whatever it is, the track, the race. The racing track? What the hell do you call what would you call it? The course. I got
The route. Yeah.
The route and the course. And so I'm assuming that your bike is giving you resistance where the hills are, and it's recreating that experience. My question is, I thought a big part of these races, and again, I clearly don't know what the hell I'm talking about. I didn't even know it's called a pitch that they race on.
I see what you did there.
Yeah. I always thought a big part of it, though, was how you draft off of other bikers and how can you recreate that experience?
Right. I know I may be the only person who knows less about cycling than you. But the other thing, too, about the way that I understand cycling to work is, you know, you have level. I was going to say Lance Armstrong. He's a little bit, it's a little loaded when you talk about Lance Armstrong, but he's one of like three cyclists I can name. So that's the problem. The other would be Miguel Indurain. And I don't think there's a third, honestly. So let's just go with Lance Armstrong. There's this complex thing about his team, which has to do with drafting and has to do with like other people in the peloton riding really hard at certain points. And then letting him kind of win at the end, or like you said, creating a kind of a slipstream that he can be in so he can draft off of them. It's like, cycling is the weirdest sport to me in terms of the strategy behind it. Mm-hmm. And yeah, a lot of that would be out the window. There's also like, I guess you could say, you don't want cyclists crashing because that's dangerous for them. But the fact that none of them can crash kind of does take a little bit of the, like part of the strategy of cycling they write about in this article is, you know, you're in a big crowd of people, and so that affects when you can ride at a certain speed and what you can do, and this of course kind of takes that part away from it as well. And I don't actually know if it has hills or not. I don't know if they're able to like actually do like recreate that in terms of resistance. It's not the full Tour de France course. It's some sort of just selected bits of it.
I do like, though, looking at, I didn't watch the video that you watched, but looking at the stills of it, I do like that they're recreating these little scenes of, like, and it looks like, you know, there's interesting shots, like, oh, this is a shot of the bikers as they go through these flowers that are apparently iconic in a certain part of the course. One thing that I'm looking at, though, and maybe I'm wrong about it here, is are all of the virtual bikers on the screen wearing the same exact outfit? And if so, that's a bad idea.
No, actually, it mentions this in the article. They're going to be wearing their team outfits because the big thing, basically the big way the Tour de France makes its money is sponsorship. And so they've got these sponsors that are looking for a way to keep their name out there and no bike race. And so the whoever's leading will have like a yellow jersey, which is the tradition, I guess. We have some listeners who are cyclists who are probably just like long since thrown their phone out their window of their car. As we learned from our friend Chris Hayes, he almost did when I was calling him Gary Rice.
Gary Hart, Gary
instead
Rice.
Of Gary, yeah. Instead of Gary Hart. I guess why this was interesting to me was because there really have been – I know that they've done this with certain kinds of auto racing too. Like in the early days, I think Formula One was doing this where they had Formula One racers in – simulators racing each other virtually. I mean, look, esports are a huge thing. So a lot of our listeners who are gamers are like, yeah, no doy. We've been watching people play virtual sports forever. But this is something I haven't had a lot of experience with. And I was surprised at how actually compelling it was. And I thought, yeah, you know, I mean, there are a lot of, if they could get the graphics, you know, to a point where you almost can't tell it's not a person and you're watching a basketball game, and there's like everyone's playing and there's cool stuff happening. I don't know. I could kind of – this made me think I could see a world where I was watching more esports and not really feeling like I was missing out on anything.
Well, okay. There's a difference here. I'm curious. Is it the fact that with these bikers you have real athleticism behind it? If you were to transpose that onto a basketball game, would it be important to you that somebody is doing something more than pushing buttons on an Xbox pad or a controller, rather, that you would still want to know that somewhere in some virtual matrix there's somebody who's like running around shooting? Is that important?
I feel like this would be step one for me to not caring, if that makes sense. Like the first step is, well, at least they're really riding a bike somewhere. But then you get into it, and then I'm just like, it slowly sort of detaches the idea of a human being is doing this. And then the next step for me is, it's an e-sport. They're not really. Well, I know that I have watched a little bit of people playing Fortnite on Twitch. I was seeing this Twitch guy named Ninja, who's like makes $5 million a month playing Fortnite. And I literally was just like, I got to see what the thing is that gets this many people to watch. And so I went on Twitch, and there he was. And I had no idea what was going on. He was just banging a lot of stuff with a sword or a hammer, and the weapon kept changing really fast. But I did find it kind of entertaining, and I didn't care that he wasn't really, like, wielding a sword chainsaw in real life or whatever. So I don't know. I guess, I mean, I could see – hopefully it won't come to this, because I do think there will be a vaccine, and I think we'll have some semblance of normal life down the road. But I'm more open to the idea than I would have been. Well, like when I did a commentary about Twitch being a bad idea.
Well, I think
which
so that
I will never live down.
I mean, you're talking about it in terms of the pandemic, but I think another very viable way to talk about it is looking at football and how much we love football, but what a dangerous game it is. And for me, like, I tried playing Fortnite. I told you, like, when it was kind of newish, and I had it on my computer for like 2 months, and not even. No, good Lord, I think I tried to play it like 5 times in the course of a week or something. I was like, I'm just terrible. This is not the game for me. It takes too much activity on my part. It's not like puzzling something out. It's like you really have to be dexterous. No. What's the word I'm looking for? You have to be very quick with your hands and eye coordination and all that. So,
coordinated. Dexterous is a word.
Yeah, maybe that's what I was thinking of. Anyway, point is, it wasn't for me, but I would die pretty quickly in the game, and then the game would continue because it's live, you know, and you have other people in this Fortnite world. And so when you die, then the camera just sweeps around and shows you what everybody else is doing in the game. And that was awesome. Or I think maybe you can choose one character and you just stick with them. And then, like, I totally got Twitch in that moment. I still haven't I still haven't signed up for Twitch, but I totally got in that moment like, oh, I would look forward to dying so I could watch other people play the game. And I was like, oh, I could see this. But the problem with like football is I'm used to that as a thing that is a real sport. You know, that's where it's like right. the difference. Like if I ever got to a place where I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm going to turn on this channel or this you know, computer and watch people play video games. That's one thing. Do I want to watch robots or virtual some sort of virtual representation of a quarterback, you know, throw from the pocket? I don't know, because to me that is something that is based on humans doing it. I do think that, you know, football is probably very bad for the world. I'll be the first one to admit that. But I don't know if I would just, if my fandom would ease into some sort of fake version of it.
Yeah. And you're right, though. Like, if there was a sport you want to do it in, it's pretty much football.
Yeah.
Just because of the physical damage. I mean, I guess we're all just kind of, we all, I mean, like sports fans are all kind of pretending that there's going to be football this year. Like, I don't know, man, with the way that the numbers are going in a lot of states.
Yeah.
And just the, like, I mean, at the very least, I would be shocked if there are, if there can be fans, right? I mean, it's probably a given there are not going to be fans, right?
I haven't been following it closely. I mean, all I know is, I mean, sports radio doesn't know what to do, you know, during pandemics mm-hmm. when there's no sports. So you would hear the various shows talk about things tangentially related to the sports and all the kind of news of sports and what's going on. But then the one thing was football was just a constant. They just talked about the draft as if it was a normal draft. They talked mm-hmm. about teams planning for the future. Like every now and then somebody would say, you know, if there's a season, but it didn't seem like anybody really had the heart to get into that. They were already talking about if there will be a season with basketball, if there will be a season with baseball, etc. And football just seemed like it was far enough out there, especially mm-hmm. in, you know, March and April, that they could just treat it like it was a regular season. But I'm with you. Like, I don't think that we can be used to the fact that, or I don't think we should get used to the fact that we're just going to have a normal football season. Like, if there's football, it's still going to be very, very much influenced by the pandemic and the season. It won't look like what we are used to.
It seems like there is a way that they could quarantine teams. And if each team is under quarantine, then when they play other teams, like if each team's bubble is tight, then presumably when they play other teams, you know, those they should be able to overlap if both bubbles have integrity to them. But then there's just like football just has so many moving parts, literally, as far as just the sidelines and the TV broadcast and the whatever. But yeah, it seems like at a minimum, I mean, there's no way that minicamp starts pretty soon. It should theoretically anyway. It's like there's no way that in September they're going to let 50,000 people go into CenturyLink Field. I mean, that's just not going to happen, it would seem.
Yeah, and these are also like, I realize this more and more the older I get, like these are kids too, right? Like a lot of these rookies right out of college, and I'm not saying this to denigrate them or try to but what I was going to say was you have trouble getting some of these young players to not drive around with weed in their car. And by the way, I'm not throwing stones there, because if I was their age, I probably would have gotten caught with weed in my car, you know, like,
right.
I'm not trying, because I think a lot of times that stuff is thrown out there with a kind of a racist hue. But like, I just mean, these are young guys who are not following the already somewhat strict rules of their team just to stay out of trouble. How are you going to keep them from, you know, congregating, even if they're just going to each other's places to play Xbox or whatever? Like, we're all struggling right. with like following all of the rules. Like, these bubbles are hard to maintain during good times.
Well, they already had. I mean, it was like Ezekiel Elliott and Dak Prescott from Dallas Cowboys got in trouble this summer for like going to a party. But again, you know, you're talking, like you said, about young people who have been physically exceptional at every level mm-hmm. of their life. They're superhuman, and they also, many of them, have millions of dollars. And now you're expecting that those people who've had that experience in life are going to be like, I'll be in my holiday room. I'll be in my hotel room at the La Quinta if you need me. Like, right. Of course not. I don't even want to do that. And I am not an exceptional, physically gifted human.
It's weird that you did an imitation of Russell Wilson there, considering that he's not even that young anymore.
Young Russie. That's his new cool name, too. We're going to call him Young Russie. Before we go to the emails, I just want to quickly mention that some of the celebrities who were involved in that Imagine kind of sing-along thing that Gal Gadot organized that got such terrible reviews are saying, yeah, that was a bad idea, including this guy, Chris O'Dowd. He was in Bridesmaids.
Yeah.
And like I said, he's in that show Get Shorty that I cannot recommend highly enough. By the way, I'm so bummed. That show, Get Shorty, season 3, I told you, they brought it back. It's on like Epics. And it ended on, the final episode is like, it's completely, I'm not going to spoil it for anyone, but it does not resolve. I just thought they had to stop making the show because of the pandemic or something.
Mm-hmm.
I guess they were just making 7 episodes, but it is in no way resolved. And now so I was like furiously Googling around trying to figure out, and they're like, yeah, it's just the 3rd season has 7 episodes. I was like, don't leave me hanging.
But they're going to come back with another season, though.
Are they?
I don't know. I'm asking.
I didn't see any mention of that. And also with the pandemic, it's going to be, everything is going to be pushed way back. That's one of those shows that is one of the shows that for the first time in a long time that I'm just like, the second it's over, I have to see what happens the next episode.
Mm-hmm.
And to realize that like there's not going to be another one for like probably 2 or 3 years, if at all.
Mm-hmm.
I was happy to have had the opportunity to watch season 3, but I'm feeling very, very unresolved about the end of it. But anyway, that guy from that show, Chris O'Dowd, who I'm a big fan of, said he was on a podcast talking about it. Talking about the backlash towards it, he says, in terms of my interpretation of it, by the way, I'll spare you guys my Irish accent. He goes, I think the backlash was justified. He got involved because he's friends with Kristen Wiig, and he presumed it was a charity thing. He knows Kristen Wiig from them having been in Bridesmaids together. And he said, I'll do anything that Kristen asks me to do. So, of course, we just did it. He goes, it took 5 minutes. I didn't think about it. I presumed it was for kids. But he also attributed the misstep to, quote, that first wave of creative diarrhea that occurred at the start of the pandemic. He said in hindsight, he believes they just needed to chill out and just take everything in, and described the video as the thing that we didn't need that everybody hated. a guy, Jamie Dornan, from the movie 50 Shades of Grey movie, he was also talking about this in some interview. And he said, essentially, Gal was just trying to do a good and kind thing. He said, and I just got dragged along with it. The part of this whole thing that I always found the most interesting was, if you're a person who's being asked by your friend to do something that you kind of have a feeling is going to suck, how do you play that? I'm not in any way as public or as well known as any of the people in this story. But even in my little world, there are some moments I can think of where people have wanted me to be a part of something they're doing. And I've thought, I don't feel great about this. And I usually find a way to just kind of like wriggle out of it or delay until, you know, it's no longer viable or whatever. But if you're Chris O'Dowd and Kristen Wiig says, hey, could you do this thing? And it takes 5 minutes and you're just at home with your cell phone. You have no good excuse for not doing it other than, hey, I think this is going to really look bad.
Yeah. I want to point out here, by the way, I know who Chris O'Dowd is now. And every time his name comes up in conversation, somebody has to remind me, the guy from Bridesmaids. Oh, yes, of course. And then I always know who he is. And I think wasn't he originally famous for the IT Crowd, that cult favorite BBC show? I think that's the same guy, although why would I even bring that up if I'm wrong about it? But anyway, I don't recognize his name right away when I see it, no matter how many times. And so I'm looking at the show sheet today. And I don't know.
And by the way, you're right.
I'm right about, the IT Crowd. Good. I just read this. I didn't have any of the context that you gave, so I don't think that this is going to really make sense to the listeners. But all I saw was this headline, as you had I assume, copied it and pasted it into the show sheet. Chris O'Dowd cites first wave of creative diarrhea as reason for Imagine Video. And I'm trying to, like, first wave of creative diarrhea, and I'm just, like, reading that. It's early in the morning, meaning it's, like, 9. No, it's, like, we're going into the show, and I'm, like, is somebody talking about diarrhea and creating a new music video for – and I wasn't making the John Lennon connection. And for some reason, I think I'm seeing Chris O'Dowd and maybe thinking Lawrence O'Donnell. Like, for some reason, like, I wasn't even thinking that he was an actor. I don't know what I was thinking. For some reason, I was getting, like, some sort of newsman vibe from Chris O'Dowd, and I just could not figure out what the hell was going on until I clicked on that thing.
That is kind of confusing, the way that I presented it to you in the show sheet. I guess the takeaway is, if your friend asks you to do something, mm-hmm. and you kind of, your gut tells you that it's a bad idea, you have to just figure out a way to gently tell them, I don't think this is something that I should be a part of, lest you end up caught up in the first wave of creative diarrhea.
Right. All right. I know you know about TBTL, the podcast. You're listening to it right now. But have you tried TBTL, the newsletter? Because you can. Just go over to tbtl.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. I gotta say, it's a lot of fun. Every week, Luke and I record a little video that we include in the newsletter. It's called Hey Dummies. We answer your questions, any questions you want to ask us. Well, there's all kinds of things in the newsletter. Don't take my word for it. Here, this is Mary. She's a big fan of the newsletter.
It has a nice welcome introduction, but then you have these phenomenal GIFs that are so much fun. You talk about amazing, wonderful people, and you introduce us to new things. And then the songs of the week. Oh, my gosh. And it just makes me so happy.
It can make you happy, too. I mean, listen, this is coming from Mary. She doesn't even listen to the podcast. She's here just for the newsletter. No joke. So, again, go to tbtl.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. And we'll try to bring a little extra sunshine to your inbox every Friday afternoon.
Here I go once again with the email. Every week, I hope that it's from a female. Oh, man. It's not from a female.
All right, any emails or V-mails that you would like to present?
Yeah, we'll start with a very simple one. We're talking about how Amazon bought the naming rights for the newly refurbished and will be reopened arena here. And they're calling it Climate Pledge Arena, which is just so clunky and terrible. And they're trying to, I feel like, greenwash themselves by doing that. But also they're saying they're doing it to remind people to keep, you know, climate change at the top of mind. Craig says, I just call it Green Arena. Sounds way better and basically does the job of Climate Pledge Arena. And it's a lot easier and naturally easy to say. I completely agree. I think I would have felt very different about the story if Amazon bought the rights and they're going to call it Green Arena and it's going to be a green arena. There's something about Climate Pledge Arena that is just, I don't know, it offends my delicate ears. And then I told you,
whenever you say that,
yeah,
it reminds me of this kid's book I used to read Addie when she was little, called Nona and the Red Racer. And if I remember the plot right, it had to do with, she's got this bike, and maybe she starts out, she has not such a great bike, and there, one of these kids doesn't like the look of her bike and says, it hurts my delicate eyeballs. But I would always say it like real sopranos to Addie. It hurts my delicate eyeballs. And then I would have to like always do it that way.
Uh-huh, right.
Every single time I read the story. The worst mistake I made with that, and some of our listeners with young kids can probably relate, there was a really great book called Tacky the Penguin about a penguin that kind of doesn't fit in. And at some point I started acting out various elements of Tacky the Penguin, rolling around and diving on things, and that became like, I was like, one of the main workouts I would do for a couple years of my life was performing the children's story Tacky the Penguin for Addie and also for my little brothers too, because they're all roughly the same age. And I would be like, they'd be like, Tacky the Penguin. I'd be like, God, I don't know if I have it in me.
Mm-hmm. Now, did you ever have to do that in front of another adult?
Oh, God, no.
Okay, yeah, that's the tough thing, right?
I would be more horrified.
Yeah. Anyway, it sounds like it was good for the core, though. Probably we're keeping it
definitely
pretty tight.
Good core workout.
Yesterday on the show, I said that I would read this email from listener Allie. We were talking about face masks, wearing them in public, and how somebody who was hard of hearing, deaf, had what's the proper way of describing the person who...
I think hard of hearing.
Hard of hearing. For some reason, that sounds
folksy.
I'm
not up on... Yeah.
Hearing impaired.
My guess would...
Hearing impaired. Right?
Are we saying that, though?
I was just hitting. I'm doing this new thing now where I just bang on my bell with a pen.
That's
it makes a really nice sound. Yeah. Why would we not be saying hearing impaired?
I don't know, because I guess I could hear the word. I could hear the word impairment being seen as kind of loaded. To say that somebody is impaired in some way might. I'm just speculating here, but I could see a world in which that would be considered not the greatest way to describe somebody's. Hearing or lack thereof, maybe? I don't know.
Anyway, well, the point is somebody came up to you while you're trying to do a story, if I have this right, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, and they just saw the cameras and were attracted to your crew and came up and started saying how they don't like wearing masks and they're hard of hearing, and so they don't have to wear a mask. They have an exemption. And you raised the question, but if you're hard of hearing, it would make sense that it would be hard to read other people's lips, but why would it be bad for the person who's actually hard of hearing? Did I set that up correctly?
Yeah, the basic vibe I got off this guy was he doesn't like masks. And he wanted to take the time to let me know, because he saw that I had a camera, that this is basically BS. He was a delivery driver. He didn't seem like a mean guy, but he seemed like somebody who had a pretty big chip on his shoulder about masks in general, and felt like he didn't want to wear a mask, and was mentioning that he's for some reason not required to wear a mask because, and I did notice that he had like hearing aids on and stuff, but he mentioned that he has hearing difficulty, and that therefore he didn't have to wear the mask, and I was confused by that. It felt to me like this is a guy who didn't like masks,
right?
And you know, maybe he fell into a certain category where it's not required, but it just seemed to me like it was convenient because, again, him wearing a mask, I couldn't see how that would play into what he was dealing with in terms of his lack of typical hearing.
Right, but we have heard about these exemptions for people who are hard of hearing too. So, Allie says, I'm a new listener, only been listening for about 4 years or so.
Oh,
first time
sure, okay.
emailer. Oh man, you have to dig in the back
catalog.
Welcome
to the team.
It's a lot of good stuff. My sister is deaf, lives in Portland, and I have many deaf friends here in Seattle as well. I don't usually speak on behalf of their community, but since you are unlikely to have any deaf tens, I will let you know what I'm seeing out here. My deaf friends and my sister are pro-mask wearing, and yes, as you mentioned on an earlier episode, they find it challenging to navigate the world without being able to see people's mouths. Even the grocery store right now can be a struggle for them. Most of the deaf and hard of hearing folks I've talked to think it's strange that they are exempt from mandatory mask wearing. The only argument I've seen, which was brought up as a kind of joke, is that if they sign exclusively, then they're not like spewing out the clouds of spit that apparently the rest of us are when we talk through our gross mouths. I hope that helps.
That's really interesting. If everybody was using ASL, I bet you that the transmission rates would go way down as well.
And Allie does say, P.S., we all agree that the masks with the clear window part might be helpful in certain circumstances, but they are super weird looking.
There's something, as we say, uncanny about that. I saw a couple of things online, like mentioned on Twitter or whatever, that I thought were very interesting. One is that it does look like they're developing a glove that you could wear, and then you could do sign language, and it would translate it to like a spoken word coming out of like your phone.
That's interesting.
So if you were somebody who used ASL, you could sign, and if I didn't understand ASL, your phone could be basically narrating what it is that you're signing to me. The other thing that I thought was crazy promising and interesting is with all the masks that are being worn. There's some technology that's being developed where you wear a mask and you speak into it in your language, and it translates it into whatever other language you want, and it plays the audio of the other language.
That is exactly like an episode of Better Off Ted that I rewatched somewhat recently. The problem
is... An episode of?
Better Off Ted.
Oh, I was confusing that with Drop Dead Fred.
Oh, right, which I've never seen. It's kind of a cult.
Because I was Drop Dead Fred was a movie. That's why I was confused by episode. What happened in Better Off Ted?
The main character meets a very attractive woman from another country, and the point, the overarching, I guess, plot or setting of the series is that they work at some sort of big global company that is always researching and developing new strange products. And so they have this very clunky translator that you carry around and you talk into it and then it automatically translates it. And the main character, a very handsome man, is falling for a woman who's visiting, I believe, from Germany, and she's very, very attractive. And they want to escalate their relationship. But unfortunately, the voice of the translator that this attractive woman is using is the voice of the nerdy guy in the lab. As she's flirting with our main character, he's having trouble getting into sexy times with her.
Ah, I see.
Doesn't sound good when I put it like that at all, but it's actually a fun show. I recommend it.
But I mean, think about the technology. Like, we definitely have lots of translation technology now and programs that can like understand spoken word. It couldn't be that far off. I mean, and as they sort of probably improve and develop it even more and open source it and it learning technology, like the software learning from mistakes and things like that. I mean, it seems like in 5 or 10 years, it could totally be a thing where if you're going to travel somewhere, you just put on a mask and you just talk and it just broadcasts out the language of the people that you're trying to talk to. And I guess then the reverse would have to work where they're talking and somehow you input that back into your brain or else it doesn't do you any good, like in a translated form. But I don't know why. That just seemed like a very cool idea to me.
Yeah, my hope would be that the masks look like Bane masks, though. And sure. The first thing everybody says is, you merely adopted the dark. I was born in it, or whatever the quote is.
They have that translated into every language.
And it's always in Bane's voice.
Yeah. Talk about some great cross-cultural promotion.
Yeah, right.
You roll up in some other country in your Bane mask trying to order a sorbet.
You used technology a little bit when you were in Mexico in the past year or so, right? Like, you said that you were really impressed with the translation software on your phone.
Yeah, man. That thing was pretty incredible. You just talk into it. And it would translate it for me. I think I like the idea of it being, I mean, a mask is, you're right, a mask is a little bit, if we're not in a pandemic, a mask can feel like a little bit of a barrier. Of course, it's literally the least we can do right now to try to keep people alive. But if there were not a pandemic and I'm strolling around Tulum, Mexico, and I'm wearing a Bane mask, I mean, that could be a little antisocial, but I do, there's something about it being like kind of right there on your face. I don't know. It just felt very, I don't know if Blade Runner is the best example of a positive future for us, but it just felt very futuristic to me.
Right. I guess it anyway. Is dystopic. We haven't done this in a while. I guess we could go out with Words by Doves, unless there's anything else on your mind that you'd like to go out with.
Nope. That's sounds good to me.
Let's do it.
All right. That's going to do it for today's episode. Thanks for listening, everybody. We will be back here tomorrow with more Imaginary Radio. Then on Friday, we're going to have a special 4th of July show. We're all celebrating the 4th of July on Friday, I guess. Is that normal? I've never heard of ending the week on a holiday.
I mean, it must only happen twice a year. Or, I'm sorry, it must only happen... Whatever. Stop talking, Walsh. It's very rare that the 4th of July would happen on a weekend. We'd usually just get the day off, right?
But I would just think it'd be Monday. Oh, isn't that kind of like when a holiday falls on a weekend, usually the Monday becomes the holiday.
That is a good point, but maybe because it's like, I don't know, Saturday. I don't know.
Anyway, we're going to do some kind of special 4th of July show on Friday. Don't worry, we'll put out new content for you. Probably a shorter show, but as usually happens, we start out with the plan of doing a shorter show and then we just do our normal amount of bullcrap. So, I don't know. Let's see what happens on Friday. We'll all find out together. But thanks for listening today. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday. Take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. And please remember, no mountain too tall.
And good luck to all.
power out.